Hello, are you worried about the oxygen 2 minus ion? That's an oxygen atom with two extra electrons hanging around it. If you are, you're probably thinking deeply. If you're not, you probably just accept anything written on the blackboard. Someone who just draws an O for an oxygen and puts two minuses next to it, that's good enough. Now I'm going to talk a little bit to you today about the actual sheer insanity of classical mechanics and how quantum mechanics comes to the rescue. This is another podcast episode of Peter Hill Explains, where I talk about things scientific. So the O2 minus ion exists in space, exists around the place. It exists supposedly in iron oxides or iron 3 oxide or iron 2 oxide. So it's there, it's an oxygen atom, and it's actually managed to gather for itself two extra electrons. Now, that's quite okay, you just say it's a spot, it's a ball, and two electrons have stuck onto it. Now, in classical mechanics, we have the positive, and this is also in quantum mechanics, so you have the positive nucleus, which contains all the plus charges. This will be, in this case, 8 plus charges, 8 protons, roughly 8 neutrons, depends a little bit. Sometimes you can have a few more, a few less. That makes an oxygen nucleus, which has got a positive charge of plus 8. So, in general, you're allowed to say that it can actually hold up to 8 electrons. That's 8 electrons of negative charge, and the view from classical mechanics is that these electrons are whizzing around like flies at a sausage in a barbecue, but erroneously to scale, people have often thought it's like a fly, and the actual sausage is put in the centre of the MCG or a large football oval to scale. This is all a bit apocryphal, but this is the classical mechanics viewpoint. And these electrons are whizzing around the place, and they whiz and fly around in beautiful orbit, like acrobatic flying. They go in and out of the nucleus and somehow avoid each other and never collide and bounce off each other. And in reality, in classical mechanics, what they would do is they would see the positive nucleus and just fall deeper and deeper into it. The idea is that the electrons must, to balance off the nucleus, if you've got 8 electrons there overall, those 8 electrons mean that from a distance at least, the positive nucleus has got no effective charge or charge out there. So if you look at from a distance, you see the 8 negative electrons and the 8 positive protons all at pretty much the same point. But as you approach closer, those electrons see each other and see the nucleus and orbit to go around. Now, this is a bit hard to believe, but in that case, that's a neutrally charged place. So it's got no overall effect on any other charge coming in. So if I have a 9th electron to make O minus, remember we're going to get 2 extra electrons to make O 2 minus, which is with 10 electrons and 8 protons in the center. But at this stage, we've got 8 electrons and 8 protons. It's neutrally charged. So in terms of if you imagine the electron being pushed away like a ball rolling up a hill or rolling across a surface, it's a flat surface. So an electron can roll in, but pretty much like a ball rolling across a billiard table, it's not going to slew one way or the other. We're used to thinking of that surface, we call that a potential surface, and there's a special term for the shape of the surface. It's a 1 on r squared, the radius squared, distance squared surface, and that produces what people have seen, a bowling ball on a latex sheet, produces this beautiful curved surface. Now, there's not too many surfaces like that around for us to imagine it. I've seen some in McDonald's where you put a little coin in, you get it to orbit and drop down. Possibly the surface going down a sink, that surface there. Architecturally, the opposite, in the opposite direction. you've got the concert hall at in Melbourne. The Melbourne Concert Hall has a spire, but it flares out at the end. That's a repulsive surface. So if you have seven electrons, the other electrons, you can imagine, at least from the distance, sees the seven electrons and the neutron, so and the protons, leaving a net charge of plus one. And at least from the distance, that's just like a single proton, and that electron will spin and orbit around there like a descending satellite. And of course, a little bit of hand waving in classical mechanics. That is, we don't know how this works. That electron never lands on the surface of the proton. And somehow it goes, in classical mechanics, it goes in there and acrobatically flies around, avoids the other electrons and never lands. In quantum mechanics, we have a different story, and we'll get on to that. So this is with one less electron, seven electrons. You add the eighth, it goes in there, and so there's no net force. If you have an eighth electron, there's no particular reason... the ninth electron, that's one extra electron. There's no reason for it to stick around, because there's an equal number of repelling electrons, and core nucleus has an equally positive charge, so eight positive charge and eight negative charge, so no net charge. So at least from a distance, the electron has no reason to go there, and when it's inside the orbit of the other electrons going around, and this is in the classical view, it's got no real reason to hang around. Why would it hang around? Because on average, it will see eight electrons and eight protons, so it will just move off. So just even the teacher writing O minus, that's a bit of a hard, tall order to understand. How can you actually have O minus? Now, there's a little bit of a let-in in that people say, oh, look, there's a space for it in the Lewis diagram. This is this diagram where you draw for the oxygen at least, an inner circle of two electrons, which corresponds to the S shell, and an outer the principal quantum number one. Then the outer electron, the outer circle has eight, corresponds to a principal quantum number of two, and consists of the radial quantum number 2s and a radial quantum number of 1p orbital, of 6p orbital and 2s. That makes 8 on the outside of that ring. A bit hard to do. You can imagine how kids are really confused trying to go through p and s, that each ring contains some p and some s. It's called infilling, and it's just sort of really an artifact. There, and the actual shells as drawn don't fill normally. So, although they graphically represent electrons at a particular distance, in reality they're at a different distance. But going again, you can say, well, look, oxygen's got eight electrons. That's two in the inner shell, and six in the outer shell. The outer shell has a capacity for eight. And so it can take another electron in. Now, this is sort of, again, hand waving. You're drawing an individual electron, but it's actually getting a little bit close to the actual quantum mechanical story. But before I let you off there, you actually quite often have O2 minus. So what happens is that you've got this atom, O2 minus, and it's going to go to O2 double minus with the addition of another electron. Now, the major thing is that this electron is just not going to try and even get close to O2 minus, so O minus, because it's got a Coulomb repulsive potential. So it's a bit like, if you will, we've got very few surfaces quite like this, if you put it upside down. A repulsive surface would be a ball, if you put a marble on top of a basketball. That's got zero repulsion at a particular point and very high repulsion as you go out to about 45 degrees in the warm. So if you've got another thing, which if you can imagine a spike going up into the air with this coulombic gentle sloping upwards to infinity, there's no reason for that second electron to get to join with O2 minus, correction, O minus, to make it O2 minus, that is, O with two minuses with it. There's no reason to do it. And there's a sort of a hand-waving thing back to Lewis diagrams, where you show there are two spots in the outer ring that can actually fit in there. Now, so essentially students are just actually, I suppose, bullied to believing this, because there's actually no mechanical way for this to necessarily work. However, there's a bit of a hint about what quantum mechanics has in store. So now we have to swap over, throw out our ideas of a point electron, a tiny little fly of electron, and a larger nucleus and a large amount of empty space, and throw that away and come up with the idea of the quantum mechanical electron. So the quantum mechanical electron, being lighter, is actually bigger. So if you put in, you use the fundamental Schrödinger wave equation, it says that the curviness, or the rate at which the smallness of an object is proportional to the mass. So a proton is very small, an electron is actually much, much bigger. And it's that ratio is for every dimension. So if it's 1,000 times lighter, which the electron is roughly 1,000 times lighter, or 2,000 times lighter, it means that it's 1,000 times bigger in the X dimension, in the Y dimension, and the Z dimension. In terms of volume or density, it's a billion times less dense, and definitely larger volume anyway. I shouldn't have even thought of density. In terms of volume, it's a billion times bigger. So this electron actually is this large, fluffy object, or an object with no surfaces. Again, in quantum mechanics, one of the things, if you look at the equation, everything is smooth off and smooth on. There's no abrupt surfaces in quantum mechanics. So each electron actually superimposes on the next electron as you go in, and you actually build up your electrons there, and they have coverage of space. And if you can imagine pulling them and actually twist them in a little like a balloon, you can actually make something called a hybrid SP orbital. So even in quantum mechanics, we go a little bit into the shell structure. So we say electrons in the second shell are hybridized. They're a fraction S and a fraction P. And so we actually don't put them into those orbitals. But the actual shape is a blob with a twist, a tiny little twist on it, and that twist is pulled through the atom. So you can imagine a clown building up this, say, a flower of electrons around the nucleus. Now, it's unlike balloons where they exclude each other, they actually slide through each other. But as you do this, the coverage of the approach to the nucleus is not 100%. It's 100% when there are 8 electrons, but this is not true for oxygen. There's 6 electrons, so the coverage is not complete. So there's actually, if you rotate the oxygen around, there are surfaces where you can actually see at close range the positive charge. And so what actually happens is that at O2 minus you get an electron, and you actually literally squeeze it in and pop it through the atom, and it's held there by the other electrons and the nucleus. So you've got a electron been held in the nucleus. It's very local coulombic attraction. There's this charged attraction, but it's largely popped or pushed through, amazingly similar to the molecular Molymod models. It's actually pushed in almost like a flower arranging, actually pushed through and locked in. And the next electron after that is amazing. There's still another space there. The other space comes from a bizarre effect that the universe is divided into two, spin up and spin down. It's a S2 symmetry. And it's, look, the maths is interesting. It's easy to, or it's actually quite easy to understand. But things have, or things in our space have a 720 degrees rotation symmetry. They're best represented by Möbius strips, which you can connect in two ways. This is a positive spin or a negative spin. Some very amazing. You can actually have a spin on a Möbius strip. That's about as close as we can imagine it stuck up in our dimensions. But this means that there is another spot at the electron in the oxygen atom, O minus, oxygen ion, with 9 electrons. There's a tenth spot in there where, from a distance, it looks like a negative charge. Overall negative charge, but when you get really close in, that negative charge is rotated around from you, hidden, and you can actually see the positive charge of the nucleus. And so this way you can actually hold a positive charge into the nucleus, even though it defies the simple laws of physics. So even your O2 minus, that is an oxygen atom with two minuses that you find in rust and perhaps a little bit in water, the O2 minus, actually, when you really think of it, defies the laws of physics. You have to actually modify your laws of physics, increase your understanding to quantum mechanics, and go through all these pretty amazing steps. But once you go through those amazing steps, you can imagine the electrons as large and fluffy and deformable, a bit like Play-Doh, and being able to twist and actually poke through a hole, a bit like flower arranging. So there you have it. That's what O2 minus is, a very fundamental thing that we give kids very early on in school, probably year 7, 8, 9, around that time we start talking about O2 minus, the oxygen ion. And if the kids are switched on and you've actually taught them very well, they're going to have difficulty understanding that next step. And the next step, the way we teach them is, well, don't bother understanding. I have this recipe and a rule, which is that ring and 8 electrons in the outside of it, with 6 there and 2 spaces, they fit in those 2 spaces. Well, they do fit in those spaces, not like the way it's drawn in the diagram. They actually are large objects, a billion times the size of the nucleus, easily, and they can twist, twist in space, and it's pretty incredible the way they can actually twist, and actually push through a hole left by the other electrons, which are similar shapes, but actually don't cover the nucleus completely, because they exist in a certain space. So there you have it, quantum mechanics. This is best as I can explain it at the moment. I'll have another go at another podcast. But in the meantime, keep on doing science.